Bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee, guten tag, ja, we viva, cat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection prison, killitary industrial core poor nation. In the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy, mockracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, food-borne in the NRA, NSA, USA, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, inexplicably broadcasting for 12 years now, as heard on Air America and CBS and Clear Channel radio stations, iTunes, TalkStream Live, Stitcher.com/GoVegan, now syndicated through the Genesis Communications Network. We've expanded to 2 hours. We're live Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. But one listener is not impressed. He said he's never going to listen again, one listener in the San Francisco Bay Area, because, quoting him, this radio program is dripping with moral superiority. And I'm really glad that that listener was perceptive enough to understand that, well, maybe being vegan is a morally superior lifestyle choice, if indeed it is morally superior to not kill. If you eat so-called meat, well, you are eating the body of someone who died. And someone who didn't die of natural causes, by the way. So, you know, maybe it is morally superior to not cause suffering and misery and death. If you do eat dead bodies, what you call meat, the ingredients are always, you know, rape, impregnation, imprisonment, mutilation, and a throat slashing that would make Jack the Ripper proud, or Jack the Ripper in a box, or a McMurdering McDevils, Murder King, Kills Jr., when dies, proud, well, of their profits, that is, as body-eating humans keep coming back for a menu of death that is dripping with, not moral superiority. We don't do this show to tease you, you know, I'm vegan and you're not, you know, I don't cause climate change and you do, and, you know, I don't cause drought and you do. I mean, no, we're not doing that. We do this show, well, so that there can be, you know, a more accurate documentation of human life for those who discover, you know, us as an archaeological project in the distant future, or for those space aliens who dumped us off on this penal colony pebble of the universe where only the worst behaved are, you know, banished, apparently. If they ever want to check up on us again in the future, I don't know why they would want to. I don't want them to get the impression that we were as advanced as we might appear, and, you know, and that our disappearance was, you know, an accident. In spite of the existence of the iPhone, okay, future space aliens digging through our rubble, our ruins, and finding this program archived at goveganradio.com, humans were still primitive, you know, cavemen and cavewomen, you know, at least as late as 2013. I mean, the iPhone came from one human out of 7 billion. You know, the other 6.999999 billion still wouldn't have invented the paper cup nor the string to, you know, tie together to create such advanced communications technologies. The other 6.99999 billion were really, you know, not out of the cave yet. They sat in caves, munching corpses, grunting their thankfulness for, you know, living in the paleo age or on a pseudo-paleo diet or whatever they were celebrating, eyes gazing on the electronic campfire replacement called the Terror Vision set. And they are entranced. They're generally watching 22 cavemen carrying and throwing and kicking a stuffed animal skin, 22 cavemen bashing each other's heads, literally. I mean, have you heard all about the debilitating brain injuries suffered by NFL players over the years, leading to a settlement with the NFL for $765 million? NFL players are more likely to have memory loss problems and suffer depression than non-athletes of the same age. Past superstars have even committed suicide. And that's all very unfortunate, but what's even more unfortunate is the behavior of the cavemen of the NFL to try to remedy it. You know, on top of the $765 million to the players, the NFL allocated $10 million to research. Now, of course, research to cavemen, you know, is, you know, grab a club and hit someone over the head, right? Bash in the heads of animals. And that's just what the NFL Foundation, formerly known as NFL Charities, has been doing. Did you know, yeah, that when you were donating to NFL Charities, you were funding animal abuse? NFL research has taken place at those wonderful, well, football institutions, you know, UCLA, Notre Dame, University of Pennsylvania. The NFL has inflicted knee injuries on dogs. Then the dogs were killed and their legs were cut off. This doesn't sound like your father's NFL, does it? It's not just not how you picture the NFL, huh? NFL research slams heavy weights onto rats' heads to cause brain and spinal cord injuries. NFL research has cut open the heads of mice to deliver crushing blows to the brain. All of these injuries sustained just as they would be on a Sunday afternoon on the gridiron, right? That's replicates the situation, doesn't it? I mean, do these NFL cavemen think that players' brains are the same as mouse brains? That players' knees are the same as dogs' knees? And, well, I mean, let's just start off by counting, well, how many legs does a dog have? And how many legs does an NFL player have? And this scientific research seems to just go, you know, we need penalty flags everywhere. So, I'm sorry, this is just one of those weeks where just, you know, I don't know, maybe it's the dripping with moral superiority. Everything seems barbaric about humanity to me. Maybe it was because it was 9/11 this past week, and we see how humans behave toward others of their species, you know, killing 3,000 that day, and how humans behave toward other species, killing 3,000 every second, you know, for food. I was reminded that every day is 9/11 for the animals. Oh, and the people who eat them, you know, I mean, who die in numbers greater than 3,000 every single day, you know. So every day you have more people dying. You know, there's a 9/11 from people dying from eating the animals who are killed at the rate of 3,000 per second. And, you know, if you would have imagined the terrorists back from, you know, the 19 terrorists in the country saying that, you know what we're going to do? We're going to destroy 800 square miles of California, you know, and we're going to ruin the economy, the recreational economy all around Yosemite and, you know, all of that. You know, everyone in California, we'd all have, you know, we'd all have microphones and cameras in our underwear. That would be required. There'd be no free speech, no right to assemble. But when you have cavemen, you know, hunters, you know, challenged by a Bic lighter, they do. They caused the two biggest fires in California history. We allow the terrorism of hunting to continue. 800 square miles of California destroyed because we are, you know, because they are, you know, we're kill crazy, you know. Just kill crazy in this sociopathic society, I'm sorry to say. I don't know, but, you know, if you're hungry, kill someone. If you're bored, you know, kill someone. And if you get lost, you know, start a major fire. If you, you know, get brain injuries in NFL games from improper helmet design, kill someone, huh? You know, people are killed in Syria. Oh, we better help the situation. Kill someone else. So, I don't know. How fortunate that 2013 primitive caveman has other species around and he can do whatever he wants to them, huh? It's okay. It's okay even for our friend Mr. Policeman, huh? I mean, our friend, we're supposed to ask directions if we're in trouble, but, you know, it's okay to be a violent speciesist. Even Mr. Policeman, our friend, always our friend. Well, except when he's wrongfully arresting me and violating my free speech rights when I'm protesting in Anaheim against Ringling Brothers Circus. But generally, Mr. Policeman is our friend, right? You know, except when he's arresting me and handcuffing me, protesting the sale of fur in Beverly Hills. But Mr. Policeman, you're not our friend when you engage in outrageous, violent, speciesist behavior that makes you look like Mr. Police Caveman. Do you know what's going on right now in Merced County, California? It's Sacramento Police Department. What it does? The police department in the capital city of the advanced civilization of California takes injured animals, dogs and cats, to the shooting range for target practice. How can this be in 2013, huh? And the police department, by the way, calls this policy humane. It must have gotten a new dictionary from the Humane Society of the United States, which is all about redefining animal torture and killing as humane. Incidentally, next week I will reveal and expose another huge lie from the Humane Society of the United States, an organization of caveman butchers. I'm going to wait till next week and... You're not going to want to miss what I have to say about another big lie from the Humane Society of the United States. I see we may be running out of time. I wanted to talk a little more about caveman butchers, because maybe this week I'm so upset because I just go to YouTube and look for a documentary, and what came up was that pig farmer in Canada, Robert Picton, who was also a serial killer of women, and he actually mixed their flesh, and there but for the grace of God, he doesn't become a vice president for the Humane Society of the United States, which does have a pig farmer vice president. I want to talk about the USDA pork inspection program later in the hour. We have Will Tuttle, World Peace Diet, coming up on the program. Jeff Stanford, Sid Garza Hillman of Stanford Inn, and Ellen Laventhal when talking about the fur ban. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. As I was attempting to say before I was so rudely interrupted by the break earlier, coming up this Saturday is the International Day of Peace. So a little bit later in the program, we will be talking to Will Tuttle, author of The World Peace Diet. Also on Saturday, the historic ban on the sale of fur in West Hollywood goes into effect, the first such ban in the United States. These are signs that maybe we are becoming civilized. We have a diet that can bring us to peace, and we're banning fur. Of course, I'd like to see the day come when we do ban leather and wool and silk and all meat. Okay, we're getting there. And also later in the program, we'll be talking to Ellen Laventhal, who was one of the prime organizers of the Fur Free WeHo campaign. So there is hope. There is even a vegan resort. Also, I would suggest that you mark your calendar for Saturday, September 28th and Sunday, September 29th for the World Veg Festival at Golden Gate Park in San Francisco. It's the 14th annual, and my next guests will be speaking there. And they've been involved with some very exciting projects. So Jeff Stanford is with us. He and his wife Joan are the owners of the Stanford Inn by the Sea, which is an eco-resort on the Mendocino coast of California. It is the only vegan resort in the U.S. Welcome, Jeff. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us here today. And before we bring Sid onto the program, who is involved with your wellness programs there, tell us how the Eco Resort became a vision and reality for you, and it's so exciting that there is a vegan resort. You know, so I think a lot of people are going to want to hear how this has all happened.
Well, it wasn't a vision. It was a conscious choice, one step at a time. In 1985, I got hurt, and I was sitting, and I couldn't, I cracked my hip vaulting over a fence. And I was sitting in our living room trying to recover, and it occurred to me that I started meditating, and the thought came to me, I'm asking people to kill animals for me to eat, and that's not ethical. So I became vegetarian. Later on, I found out what was going on in dairy, so I became vegan. And all the decisions that Joan and I explained my thinking to Joan, she followed right along with me, and so did our kids. And what happened is that we've guided all the decisions that we make about the inn with regards to our personal choices. We feel it's better to to minimize cognitive dissonance, as you'd like. I did follow staff recommendations for a while to remain vegetarian with cheese and dairy, but I didn't feel good about that until we turned the restaurant and the inn completely vegan. Way too long, as far as I'm concerned. I've been a vegan for 5 years, and it took too long to do that, and I'm glad that it's vegan.
Well, so am I. So is the world, yeah. So, well, tell us a little bit about the inn in general. What the facilities there, and what activities happen.
Right. Well, we've always been guided by the idea that the best recreation is the recreation which you can do pretty much anywhere. For example, you can walk anywhere, and therefore hiking here is a part of what we offer. We want human-paddled crafts, so we have canoes and kayaks on Big River, which is an estuary, which is tidal, for 8 miles, so people can canoe and kayak, and it's a protected estuary, and people can see harbor seals, river otters, everything up to black bear, which is not common, but you do see them occasionally. We have mountain biking available. We've been handing out bikes to our guests at no charge since 1981. The canoeing we've been doing since 1983. We also offer gardening classes, cooking classes, and so on, all of which are based on an ethical, sustainable way of life. And then we also have, for normal kind of guest amenities that you would find at a hotel, we have a swimming pool. We have a massage spa. We have an exercise room. But we also have acupuncture, Chinese medicine, Tai Chi, Qigong, and other practices that guests can...
Okay, Jeff, we need to take a break, and we'll talk to Sid Garza Hillman, also of the Stanford Inn, coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. If you'd like to become a sponsor of the program, you can email me. It's bob@goveganradio.com. And also, we are listener-supported with tax-deductible donations. You can find the donate button at goveganradio.com with probably about 400 archived programs from over the years. Today we are talking to Jeff Stanford. He's the owner of the Stanford Inn by the Sea and Eco Resort on the Mendocino coast of California. And get this, it is the only vegan resort in the U.S. Before the break, we were talking to Jeff about the activities going on there, including certified organic gardens and just that it's in a beautiful area for canoeing and biking and hiking. And in a moment, we'll bring on Sid Garza-Hellman, who is the Mendocino Center for Living Well director, which is associated with the Stanford Inn. So, Jeff, about the restaurant then, it's 100% vegan. You have the certified gardens there. What would you say are some of the most popular favorite dishes there?
The sea palm strudel. Sea palm is a kelp that is locally harvested by some actually friends of ours, and we put it into a strudel with root vegetables, carrots, and onions. Kind of looks like a yin yang symbol when you cut through it, and we serve it, and we serve that with an Asian stir fry now.
Mm. Sounds delicious.
Special, and it's very healthful, and it's very safe right now. But we're watching for the Fukushima radiation.
Okay. And another great dish there that people really love.
Well, it depends on whether you're talking morning or night. So a morning dish that people like is called citrus polenta, which we make with a cashew cream sauce and polenta that's made with 25% grapefruit juice, 25% orange juice, some lemon juice, and the rest is water. And we cook that and make it into thin slices and then serve that with greens from our garden. It can be kale or chard. And we braise that in a braising sauce that we developed here actually almost 20 years ago.
Mm,
it's very delicious. It's our most popular breakfast dish, and it can be served at night, too.
Mm-hmm. What's the website for the inn?
StanfordInn.com.
Okay. And companion animals welcome, I see.
Any kind of animal, pretty much. We just had a miniature pot-bellied pig here.
Ah.
I can't remember its name. It was something like Gardenia or something, but that pig has its own website, and it travels quite a lot. It's an adventuresome animal, and they're pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
We have pigs and parrots and dogs and cats, mostly dogs, of course.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Okay. Well, let's bring on Sid Garza-Hellman, who is the director of the Mendocino Center for Living Well, which is associated with Stanford Inn. He's a certified nutritionist and author of Approaching the Natural Health Manifesto. Welcome, Sid. How are you today?
I'm fine, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being with us. An interesting course for you, a UCLA philosophy major, and then an indie rock musician, Woody Harrelson, and asthma. And how has all of this led to where you are now?
This sounds like a game show question. What do all these things have in common? And
I
the answer would be me. I did graduate from UCLA, and I was an indie rock musician, I think because I was a philosophy major. But I was also chronic asthmatic. And in college, one of my part-time jobs was Woody's assistant, personal assistant. And he gave me a
How'd you get that job? Everybody would. How does one get, you know, that job, which everybody would want? How'd that happen?
Well, first of all, if you knew the job, you probably not everybody would want it. And secondly, his wife is Laura Louie, who was a sorority sister of my sister's, and so they were looking, and so they called me, and that's how I got that job.
Oh, okay, all right,
yeah. So I gave up dairy back then, and my asthma went away within about a month, and I've never had it since. And that was the beginning of my journey with nutrition up until I moved up to Mendocino and basically met Jeff and joined up with the Stanford Inn.
Mm-hmm. So and then what? Oh, did Woody introduce you to some reading or something that helped you along the way too? Was that what I?
Yeah, he gave me the book Fit for Life, which is interesting because when I went back to school to become a certified nutritionist in 2009, they were still citing that book, and I think it was published in 1982, so it's still relevant almost 30 years later. And so, anyway, it's just an interesting little fact about that.
Okay. And how did you become associated with the Stanford Inn and Jeff and Joan?
Well, basically, by the time my wife and I and we had a daughter back then. Now we have two more children. But when we moved up here, we were already vegan, and we got up to the coast. I had been a full-time actor in L.A., making a living as an actor, but really gotten burnt on the whole scene down there. So we decided to hightail it up here and take it easy. And I found the inn, and it was vegan. We went to the restaurant, and I thought, I got to work here. And so I applied and met Jeff, and kind of the rest is history.
So what... what do you offer there? What are your services as the director of the Mendocino Center for Living Well? What can people expect of you if they are visiting the inn? What services do you provide?
All right. So I'm the programs director, and the Wellness Center has been around, but Jeff and Joan asked me to really make it its own branded, you know, center. And it's always been, it's part of Stanford Inn, just like Catch a Canoe is. But we really developed it, and it is, in my opinion, the most wide-ranging and integrated holistic wellness center in the country. I've never seen anything like it. We do gardening, cooking. I do nutrition classes. We do. We have a full Chinese herbal dispensary. We do acupuncture, acupressure. We do creative play shops. Joan Stanford is a registered and board certified art therapist. We do meditation. Jeff does meditation classes and cooking in our working kitchen in Raven's Restaurant. You get to work with one of our chefs, and it's just a really exciting, fun place to work.
Oh, great. Well, how long would one have to stay at the inn to be able to take advantage of so much?
About a year and a quarter. No, I'm joking. In 2 or 3 days, we just are so flexible with our instructors that people can have a very relaxing vacation and also do some really cool stuff. We do offer packages. We're developing a new one called Transition to Health at the Stanford Inn that people can come up, an all-inclusive package that includes nutrition classes with me, cooking classes, and it's basically a very real-life how-to of how to transition your life to a healthier way to live, and really practical, not all this kind of esoteric stuff, but just really, what do I do when I get home? We answer those questions.
Why did you become vegan?
Well, I did because of my asthma. That was my initial reason for becoming vegan. Why I don't cheat anymore is because of the other things I learned about animal production in this country, and that's why I don't stray. It's become an ethical and spiritual issue for me, but it began as a diet, as a health decision.
And Jeff, why did you become vegan yourself?
It's totally it's a spiritual choice. I don't want to be part of killing and violence. And, you know, our nature is somewhat violent anyway. I get angry and so on. I don't need to add any more to it. So I quit doing anything that kept people having to kill animals.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And I found that it's really easy to survive on actually little food, but most importantly, I find it's easier to survive on whole foods. So I travel around with baked potatoes. I can go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Great. We're talking to Jeff Stanford, who's the owner of the Stanford Inn by the Sea, Mendocino Coast of California, and Sid Garza Hillman, who is with the wellness program there. And you're both going to be speaking at the World Veg Festival in San Francisco, I believe, on September 29th?
And 28th.
And 28th? Okay. So
Jeff is speaking on the 28th, and I'm speaking on the 29th.
Okay. What's the topic for each?
Well, I'm speaking about vegan travel and creating a vegan inn.
And I'm doing a talk on my book, related to my book.
And that book, I'm going to sell it a bit, because that book gives really practical advice, and it makes it easy, small steps, for people to move forward, at least into health, even if they're totally into their own selves, this works very well. I recommend the book well. It's been well received. The other thing is that we follow the work of John McDougall, who only is an hour from here, and that's why I mentioned the baked potatoes. It's really a shout out to his starch solution.
Yeah. You know, interesting. I was just reading some of McDougall's opinions on Parkinson's disease because I just read that Linda Ronstadt cannot sing a note. I mean, this is My Heart is Broken, one of my favorite singers of all time. And she can't sing and she has Parkinson's. And I was reading McDougall connecting that to diet, and it's really pretty shocking. So the book we're talking, though, about, Sid Garza-Hillman, is Approaching the Natural, a Health Manifesto. So give us, you know, a little thumbnail sketch of it yourself, then, with, you know, Jeff's just selling it a bit, but tell us a bit about it, you know, from your perspective.
Well, the premise of the book is, and it's sourced from my frustration early on as a nutritionist that people not sticking with what I was offering, and it was frustrating, and they would try, and then life would take over, and they would kind of go back to their old ways, and I came upon a philosophy of health, basically, and the book is one chapter of nutrition, but then it goes on to cover a huge, wide-ranging amount of what I consider to be the larger picture of health. The premise is that the closer we get by degrees to our natural design, the healthier and happier we will be, and it is by degrees, so I argue for whatever steps are doable every day, and that might mean that the step is so small that it seems inconsequential, but I argue that if you can start doing something every day, then it is very, very profound and will eventually lead to real change in your life. And so I apply that to nutrition and exercise, movement, to mindfulness, to socialization, and even to connection to the earth.
Well, that's great. So it's Approaching the Natural, a Health Manifesto. And, whoops, we must take a little break. If you could spend just a couple more minutes. We're coming up on Dr. Will Tuttle in the next hour, author of The World Peace Diet, and Ellen Laventhal. We'll celebrate the fur ban going into effect Saturday in West Hollywood. It's Go Vegan with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, Twitter at goveganradio, and we are talking today. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll have Will Tuttle, author of The World Peace Diet, as we get ready to celebrate the International Day of Peace coming up on Saturday. Also celebrating on Saturday the day that the fur ban goes into effect, the sale of fur in West Hollywood. Also next hour, Ellen Laventhal from the fur-free WeHo movement that made it happen. And so we've been talking for a good time this past hour with Jeff Stanford at the Stanford Inn, an eco-resort on the Mendocino coast of California, and Sid Garza-Hillman, who is involved with the wellness program there. And Jeff, being a sustainable eco-resort, what does that mean?
All the decisions that we make are based on the most sustainable action that we can take. Obviously, driving to Mendocino, even in a Tesla, is not the most sustainable action that one can take. But when they come here, when people do arrive, they can have experiences that utilize very little of the Earth's resources, like bicycling, a massage. They can eat. The difference between eating here and the carbon footprint of eating at a restaurant that serves a regular American diet is enormous. We're worth many fleets of Priuses out there in terms of reduction of our carbon footprint alone. And all the decisions we make in terms of building, all the decisions that we make in terms of the products that we use in the rooms, the products that we use to clean the rooms and the sheets and towels, the very washing machines that we use, all of that is made on the basis of what is the most sustainable product. So sometimes the answers are amazing and unusual. For us, it's more sustainable to use a bunch of small LG washer, front-loading washers, than to be using big commercial machines because they use less water per pound. There's different ways of doing the research, and mostly I spend my time doing that research.
Mm. Wonderful. Okay. So,
and by the way, yes. when you talk to Will Tuttle, say hello. We haven't seen him for a while. He's the guest of the inn.
Ah, wonderful. Will do. Will do. Yeah. So it sounds wonderful there, like a great time, and you have all sorts of events. People can even have a wedding there if they so desire.
We have a lot of people coming from around the country, actually from Europe, to get married because of the vegan resort. They don't want to have animal sacrifices to celebrate their wedding.
Mm-hmm. Very understandable. Okay, that's the Stanford Inn by the Sea, the only vegan resort in the U.S., Jeff Stanford. Anything you wanted to mention, Sid Garza-Hillman, we had in our last few seconds here that we didn't address?
Two quick things. We're having a yoga retreat in October, and people should come to livingwellmendocino.com for the Wellness Center here to see all the cool stuff we're doing, and just come visit us. One of the most fun things to do here is just be able to see Jeff and me. That's we're probably the biggest draw in the whole place. Right? Isn't that right, Jeff?
Yes, and I'm a minister too. That's true.
So you handle weddings.
We believe that this whole adventure that we're on it should be fun. There should be humor involved. It should not be taken heavily, but it's important work. So we believe important work should be addressed with humor. So it is fun here. We have a lot of fun.
Great. Okay. Well, we'll have fun seeing you at the World Veg Festival, September 28th and 29th at the County Fair Building at Golden Gate Park. I'll be there. Well, I'm the MC of the event, they tell me, so I better pay attention. And in fact, I'll probably be introducing you on stage there. So
you will, actually, on my day.
Okay. And then I have a talk Saturday morning from 10:30 to noon. I am definitely worth the price of no admission, because if you show up by 10:30, it is free, and it's also free for students with ID, seniors over 65, children under 12, everybody else $10. But it's two of the most fun days that you could possibly have, and I'm speaking on the subject of humane meat and the compromise of animal advocacy. Next week, I will tell you another big lie being perpetuated by the Humane Society of the United States. Will Tuttle coming up next on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Greetings once again. It is our second hour. We've expanded to 2 hours. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden now live Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Excuse me. Syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, GCNLive.com. And you can support the program by being a sponsor. We are grateful to Cool Cups, makers of America's number one selling all-natural gelatin-free snacks. And, you know, what has gelatin is J-E-L-L. No, you know, ingredients, hooves and skins of animals boiled into it to make it jiggly, but not Cool Cups because, well, they're made out of seaweed. And Cool Cups natural gels are available in three delicious flavors, orange, peach mango, and black cherry. They come in convenient single serving cups. And four packs, and they are GMO-free, 100% vegan, gluten-free, naturally low in calories. And you can go to cool-cups.net/gelatin, cool-cups.net/gelatin, to find out really how yucky gelatin is and why you should be given the kids Cool Cups, which are available at Viva La Vegan Grocery, the world's largest vegan grocery store in Rancho Cucamonga. And yes, the new Viva La Vegan in Santa Monica, 28th and Ocean Park, is open. They haven't had the grand opening yet, but it's there. You can stop by Viva La Vegan Grocery. So, coming up this coming Saturday, it is the International Day of Peace. And with whom would it be better to celebrate than the author of The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony? That author, Will Tuttle. He has his PhD in philosophy from the University of California at Berkeley and a master's in humanities from San Francisco State University. He's a teacher, a lecturer, a pianist, a composer, has many CDs out. He's trained in Korea as a Zen Buddhist monk. He's received many humanitarian awards. And welcome back, my friend Will Tuttle. How are you doing today?
Oh, hi, Bob. Thank you. It's so good to hear your voice, and thanks for the fabulous work that you do and your persistence over these many years.
Well, until there's a vegan world, you know,
right.
The work goes on, you know.
What else is there to do, right?
What else is there to do? What could be more important than this? So,
right, you know, exactly.
Yeah. And the World Peace Diet is the number one Amazon bestseller, and you go around the country lecturing and usually to sold out audiences. And what is it? Are there certain elements of the book that people seem to mention to you that jump out to them, that have been touching to them in particular ways?
Yeah, well, actually, there's a couple of things, especially that relate to the theme of world peace. And I think one of the main things, Bob, is the fact that The World Peace Diet is one of the only books, I think, really, actually, that goes into the devastation of animal-based food system, not just in the outer world. I mean, there's a lot of books that go into that. The World Peace Diet does, too. But how it devastates the inner world, our psychology, our emotions, the spiritual dimension, and how the routine and relentless violence towards animals for food and other products causes us to have a certain mentality as individuals being raised in the society and being forced from the time we're little infants to participate in food rituals, daily meals, which essentially suppress our natural wisdom and compassion. And forcing little kids to participate in these meals represses what I refer to in the World Peace Diet as Sophia. And a lot of people, especially women, but I think people in general really resonate with this, and they say, oh my gosh, you know, this is something that no one's been talking about, the suppression of the inner sacred feminine dimension of our lives, which cultures around the world have all recognized, that we human beings have an inner feminine wisdom which yearns to protect and nurture life. But by forcing children to eat the flesh of the animals who have been tortured and killed and the secretions of these animals, it basically, at a very deep level, suppresses this inner feminine wisdom that we all have in us, and so we basically lose our natural sense of self-confidence, the natural sense we have of living in a benevolent, beautiful planet and universe, and we become gullible consumers trying to get for ourselves. We become easily manipulated. And we go to wars, you know, that are not in our best interest. We learn to basically disconnect from the reality that's on our plate every day. And so because we practice this disconnecting and the sort of the sense of not wanting to know, if I say to someone, do you want to know where your bacon comes from? They say, no, I don't want to know. I wouldn't be able to enjoy my bacon. You know, there's this fundamental thing going on. So when we practice that every day as a society and as individuals within the society, we become very good at disconnecting and not and losing our natural wisdom and compassion, which are both functions of connecting. And so as a society, we'll never be able to have peace as long as this inner feminine is suppressed and as long as we're dominating animals in this way. It's primarily the female animals that are most brutally harmed in animal agriculture from the very beginning, and it's not just the female animals. It's their uteruses, their mammary glands, their reproductive organs and reproductive cycles. It's the forced insemination of animals against their will. It's the stealing of their babies. You know, we could not do that by the millions like we do in our society without suppressing our own feminine wisdom. And when we do that, then we can send our children off to war. We can be cutting down the rainforest and violating the oceans and the ecosystems and the rights of our children, really, allowing corporations to come invading into our children's lives through corporate advertising and pornography and violence that tries to just turn them into consumers for their products. Sophia would never stand for that. You know, the inner wisdom that we all have would not allow that, but since it's so suppressed by forcing kids and all of us to eat animal foods growing up, then this is what happens. So if we really want to have a world of peace and justice, which you have to have justice also to have peace, then we must give justice to the animals, to the people who are starving because we're feeding the grains that could feed them to animals, and to the slaughterhouse workers who have to do the horrible work that and it brings out the worst in them. You know, that's a horrible injustice as well. And then the injustice to the inner psychology and spiritual dimension of all of us, which basically is suppressed as we participate in acts of violence routinely towards other living beings. Animals, we call them animals. I mean, they're, you know, that's just a word, but they're beings, as you know, Bob, who have interests that are to them as important to them as our interests are to us. And so when we live in a society that just doesn't care about that in their interest, that's an extremely primitive, dark, devastating mentality. We look back at this, you know, in the days in this country when we had slavery, and we think what a horrible time that was. It was terrible for not only for the slaves, but for the slaveholders. It forced them to disconnect from their natural humanity and their natural compassion and harm people in horrible ways. And I think in the future, people will look back on these days in the same way, obviously, what we're doing to animals. And we will never be able to have peace among us as long as we're committing such atrocities routinely towards animals for food and sowing the seeds of violence towards animals. And then the other thing I think that's important that I point out in the World Peace Diet, I mean, there's actually a lot of different things, but is the fact that these animals, like pigs and cows and chickens, they don't retaliate. They do not retaliate. So we think, since they don't retaliate, that it's okay to do it. You know, like, I mean, if we harm another person, we have social systems in place where we are forced to pay for that. We go to jail or we get sued or something if we harm other people. There's protections we've put in place. Or the people themselves might retaliate. They might hit us or something. But we can do whatever we want, really, to these poor, these animals, these innocent animals. We can hyper-confine them, stab them, steal their babies, electroshock them, kill them. They don't sue us. You know, they can't retaliate. They just suffer. They just take it. But what we don't see as a society is that our violence towards them always retaliates. It always comes back. But we're so disconnected that we don't see it. We don't recognize that it's coming back as physical diseases, you know, whole epidemics of all kinds of diseases that we're suffering, psychological diseases, spiritual disease, social disease, war, terrorism, social breakdown, the breakdown of the family, the problems that we're having, all of them we are inflicting routinely on animals for food, and it boomerangs back at us. So we have to grow, I think, and mature ethically, spiritually, morally, psychologically, and emotionally to the point where we free ourselves from this really toxic cultural program where we're forced as little infants to eat the flesh of animals and say we're not going to do that anymore and instead eat a whole foods plant-based diet, which is based on kindness and compassion and harmony really with nature and with the animals, and let wildlife come back, let the oceans come back, let the forests come back, let the rivers come back, let our natural intelligence come back, let our health come back, our physical, psychological, and social health come back. And as all these things start returning, then we'll be actually at a level where we can create the society that we would like to have. And we can elect officials that actually represent us, because you know, we live in a society now where we wonder why we have such terrible leaders, why they're always bringing us into war. But we have to look at ourselves. I mean, we are engaging in a war, you know, and people are taking out their wallet and paying for it every day. It's a war against animals. We're killing 75 million animals every day for food in the United States. I mean, that's a huge industrialized killing machine. And how can we expect to evade the consequences of that? These animals are suffering. People are suffering. Future generations are suffering. It's causing huge suffering. And if we expect to actually be worthy of a world of peace, then we have to, as Jesus said, we have to show mercy to those who are in our hands and to whom we are not showing any mercy. And once we begin to do that, then we'll be worthy of peace. And we will have peace and we'll have justice. But if we don't, if we want to have a peace movement or a social justice movement or an equality movement and still eat animal foods, dairy products, eggs, and the flesh of animals, it's ridiculous because we're not living the teachings that we, and living the, as Gandhi said, the change that we want to see ourselves, and our efforts are merely ironic. So I think these are the main points that we have to remember, especially now when we seem to be so close to war. We have to, as people, go vegan. I mean, there's nothing more important than going vegan in terms of an ethical stance for radical inclusion, caring, compassion for all beings. That's the foundation of peace, and it's available to us.
Will Tuttle, we will continue our discussion for a few more minutes after the break. Will Tuttle, author of The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. We will continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linton. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. Coming up on Saturday, it is the International Day of Peace. You want to eat peace? Go to Vegetarian House in San Jose, one of the great restaurants in all the world. Check out the website, vegetarianhouse.us, 520 East Santa Clara Street, 100% vegan, organic, just unbelievable menu, international cuisine, raw options available, and also available for catering. The business is booming for Vegetarian House with a lot of the dot-com Silicon Valley companies and all who want to please their vegan employees. Vegetarian House is the place to contact for catering. Whether it's a small office or 1,000 people or your next wedding, vegetarianhouse.us. We're talking to Will Tuttle, author of The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. I guess you really can't be a meat, dairy, fish, and egg-eating peace activist, Will.
Well, I think you're right, Bob. I think more and more people are starting to realize that actually is, I don't want to say hypocritical, but it's just, it's ironic. It's disempowering because, we're trying to serve two masters. You know, we want to basically engage in behavior that's causing war, but we're working for peace. And it's definitely causing war because the inequity that we see all over the planet, where we have roughly one out of seven people on the planet, roughly a billion people, 950 million people right now are going hungry or starving, and roughly a billion people, the people in the industrialized nations like the United States, are taking most of the grain that could feed these people and feeding it to animals. You know, we're growing enough food, for example, to feed between 12 and 15 billion people, and we only have 7 billion. So we could feed everyone more than twice they need, and yet we have people starving. This kind of injustice is a driving force underneath war, and we must really understand this and do our part, I think, to, out of compassion, not only for animals, but for other people, and out of a yearning for peace and harmony for ourselves and for our children, move to a plant-based diet. There's nothing more important than that, I think, to understand this and to move in that direction all
That's
the way.
Right. We need to go vegan for peace because wars are fought over resources like Water, you know, a vegan needs 10,000 gallons of water to grow his or her food in a year, and a flesh eater needs 320,000 gallons. So, I mean, 32
right.
vegans can be fed to one.
Water and petroleum and land and pollution,
food,
everything. Grain, basically. Yeah. Grain and legumes are going to feed animals. We're cutting down the rainforest in Central and South America to feed, basically, to grow soybeans to feed animals. And this devastation, really, of societies and cultures is underlying all of this. So,
and climate change refugees. With climate change come more refugees and you know, more strife. And that's why, you know, people like you are vegan as a peace activist. Cindy Sheehan is vegan. Dennis Kucinich is vegan. Cesar Chavez was vegan. I'm vegan. I've been, you know, marching against war since high school in the Vietnam War.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, how can you have the blood of a murder victim running down your chin, you know, like after being in a peace march, you know, and going to eat somewhere, and it's like, hello, you know, it's like right in your face, you know. So
exactly, and also one of the points I think is important, just going a little deeper with that, is the fact that basically every meal, if I'm eating animal foods, the underlying subtext of the meal is supporting privilege and elitism, because the subtext of every meal that we're teaching our children this, and we're reinforcing this in ourselves, is that certain beings are superior, and that's us. And other beings are inferior, and that's these animals whose interests we just don't care about and we harm. And so we think we're working, it's so ironic, and we're working to reduce privilege and elitism and this whole sense of entitlement, you know, that, you know, we're just entitled to destroy the world and to use, you know, anybody who's conscious at all is working to reduce privilege and elitism and injustice and inequity, but every single meal is a ritualized learning and reinforcement of privilege and elitism. By its very nature, we're eating this, and we're feeding this to our children, this fundamental teaching of might makes right, domination, exploitation, and oppression of other beings, and inequality. So this is what I think people have to really understand, that it's not just the outer world that is devastated and causing war and injustice. It is, and that's a huge, important thing. But on the inner level, it harms us as well.
Well, if you can stay with us a couple of more minutes through the break, and we have Ellen Laventhal coming up on the fur ban on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden coming up. Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, as heard on Air America, now syndicated through the Genesis Communications Network. In a few minutes, we'll be talking to Ellen Laventhal, because not only is next Saturday the International Day of Peace, but it is the day that the first retail fur ban in the U.S. of A. goes into effect in West Hollywood, and Ellen was instrumental in making that happen, and we've been talking to Will Tuttle, who's the author of The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. I'd like to challenge everybody listening who says that he or she is a peace activist to, you know, walk the walk, talk the talk, and go vegan. Maybe set this Saturday as the goal, you know, for bringing that peace into your life. What do you think, Will?
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, I think that's really true, you know, and it's a concrete action that everyone can take, and it has huge ramifications. And I've actually heard from a lot of people that when they get the animal foods out of their diet, they actually experience a lot more harmony within themselves, in their mind, in their relationships, and it's just a fantastic way to both in the inner and outer world to bring peace to our planet and to ourselves. And it's been great, actually, lately in the last few years to see the World Peace Diet being translated into all these languages, like into Hebrew. It's a bestseller right now in Israel. Into Chinese, it's a bestseller in Taiwan, and it's being into mainland China, as well as Russia, many of the European languages, Spanish, German, French, Croatian, Slovenian, and Korean, also in Asia, Korean, Indonesian, quite a few languages where that, and a lot of them do have conflict. So I think what we're seeing is not just confined, obviously, to the West. It's a global phenomenon, and we're working hard, really, like you are, to get the word out. We have the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training and Mastery Program, and people are, you know, spreading the message locally through communities. And so it's really something I think we can all pitch in and do something. And it's I agree with you. It's the most important work we can do.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for being with us today. And how can people get the book or contact you, the website?
Yeah, it's the book is available at Amazon.com, of course. And we have a website, worldpeacediet.org. And also worldpeacediet.com, and they have information there about our veg inspiration for the day and the different trainings and getting the book and all that stuff. Yeah.
Terrific. Okay. Well, thanks for being with us again. It's always a pleasure to have you on, and you're one of my favorite lecturers, in-person speakers, so I recommend to people if you see that Will's coming to town, he's usually at a Loving Hut or a great vegan restaurant like that. Go check it out. It's well worth it, right? So you're just
We were just actually at the Loving Hut in Seattle last night, and I'll be at the Veg Fest in Portland next weekend. And we have a schedule. It's on that website. We're traveling around, and so if you know anybody in the area, that'd be great.
Terrific. Okay, thanks for being with
us. Thanks, Bob.
Will Tuttle, author of The World Peace Diet. And maybe some more peace in the world for animals begins as of next Saturday, a historic legislation going into effect in West Hollywood. Little signs that maybe we are civilized or evolving. A fur ban going into effect in West Hollywood this coming Saturday. And one of the organizers of the Fur Free WeHo movement was Ellen Leventhal. She's quoted in an article that just came out talking about this in California Apparel News. And welcome to Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. How are you today, Ellen?
Hi, Bob. Well, I need to begin by thanking you for your contribution to this band, because as I recall, you were at many of the rallies, you were at some of the hearings, and you spoke about the band from your platform on Go Vegan Radio. So I didn't want to let this opportunity go by to not thank you for that.
Why, thank you. And the ban happened in spite of my involvement, which is really amazing. Very surprising. It's wonderful.
You got something right, Bob.
So take us to the roots of this. I mean, how did something like this happen? How did it start? And how did it actually happen?
Well, I mean, that is a good question when you consider that this is truly a historic ban. This is the first city in the nation, and possibly, we're not even sure of this, but possibly only the second in the world to have such a ban. So it truly was quite a feat for the animal activist community. And how it began was John D'Amico, who was then running for city council member. He's now currently, you know, a city council member, but at the time he was just campaigning. And one of his the platforms that he was expounding on was animal rights, and in particular, a fur ban in West Hollywood, because as you know, West Hollywood already has championed other animal rights issues, such as the first ban on declawing cats in the nation, and one of the earlier bans on the sale of live animals, dogs, and our companion animals in pet shops. So we envision this is just, you know, following suit with what was already their philosophy, you know, of humanity towards, you know, humans and animals alike. So we approached John D'Amico and discussed with him the, you know, possibility of the animal community getting behind his candidacy, his campaign, and in return, him getting behind our campaign for a fur-free city. And it was definitely mutually beneficial. And John was championing the cause. In fact, he did get elected. The animal community got largely behind him. And when he got elected, this was one of his first, it was his first item of business, was to propose this ban to the rest of the council.
You mean somebody actually carried through on a campaign promise? Are politicians allowed to do that? I didn't think that was... What?
I know, right? And what was especially, you know, pleasing for, you know, for me to recall was that when he brought this to his staffers, they said, "You're crazy. This is going to hurt you." And he said, "But it's the right thing to do." And, you know, it's it gives me goosebumps when I think about that, you know, a politician.
Right. A politician carrying through on a campaign promise and doing something because it's the right thing to do. I'm in shock. I'm going to faint. I don't know.
So when we got behind him, you know, we felt like we were doing this for a person who was like who was all around a good man, you know, aside from his stance on this particular issue. But what we did is what the movement, the For Free We Hope movement did is we carried on 6 weeks of campaigns, of rallies around West Hollywood to kind of educate, you know, the citizens of West Hollywood about the ban that we were, you know, proposing and the issue of fur itself and what goes into a fur coat, what lies behind that fur coat in the window. And after we had done that and felt like we had made some leeway and the citizens, for the most part, you know, polls had showed, as well as the responses we were getting on the street corner, or that the citizens were by and large, you know, truly behind the ban. Then we moved to the second item of business, and that was campaigning for John DiMicco's election itself. And then with those two things behind us, then it was actually getting this through the city council. And there were three hearings, and as you recall, you know, they went well into past midnight. They were that heated.
Right, I remember.
You know, I don't think the city council chambers had ever been that packed, or rarely have been that packed, with over 100 activists and then maybe 20 or 30 retailers and the fur council on the other side. But in the end, we were victorious, and we have. But the ban did not actually go into effect. They gave the retail stores a grace period, which now has, for the most part, ended, and the fur ban goes into effect on Saturday. Officially, it goes into effect on Saturday, the 21st. But in reality, they still have, you know, like a 60-day compliance period.
And you're planning a rally this coming Saturday, the 21st, to celebrate the ban.
Yes, we are. There's actually three purposes of the rally. Number one, it is a celebration because, as I said, this is historic, and we want to thank West Hollywood for their compassionate stance on the issue. Another reason for the ban is to show the world that a fur ban can happen. It's happened here, and you know you too can make this happen. So it's just you know another opportunity to shed light on this on you know what is going on in West Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And
the rally is this Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m. Is that at the L.A. County Sheriff's Department, West Hollywood Station on the 700 block of North San Vicente?
To mention that it's by the sheriff. It is on the grassy knoll that happens to be, you know, near the sheriff's station, but it is on the southeast corner of San Vicente and Santa Monica Boulevard, which leads me to the third reason we wanted and last final reason we wanted to have this rally is it is a very busy intersection and it's a great opportunity to educate, you know, the consumers and passerbys on the issue of fur at the beginning of what is the, you know, the fall winter fashion season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately the time that most fur coats are sold. So
right,
it's just an opportunity
right.
to educate
so what,
people.
So what does the ban do? What is banned?
What is banned is the retail sale of fur apparel and shoes. It does exclude furniture and some accessories like fur trim on purses, but a vintage secondhand store, they are exempted. But otherwise, you cannot go into Maxfield's anymore or Kitson, Balenciaga, Christian Dior, any of the boutiques that formerly were carrying fur that are in the 90069 zip code will no longer be carrying fur items.
And this will be enforced, and is there any fear of trying to overturn the law?
I'm glad you brought that up, Bob, because I was remiss in not mentioning that is another reason for this rally, is that we have intercepted a letter from the Fur Council to the retailers of West Hollywood asking them to join in, to get together so that they can, like, join forces to overturn this ban. Because legally, they cannot do it until they show damages, and they can't show damages until the law is actually, being enforced. So they're already plotting as to how they can overturn this ban showing damages. But in reality, we know that not one single retail establishment has left West Hollywood for this reason. Mm-hmm. In fact, establishments have moved in, even one such as Dash, the Kardashian store, that sells fur.
Ellen, hold on 1 second. We have to take a break. We'll continue for a few more minutes with Ellen Leventhal talking about the fur ban in West Hollywood starting this Saturday. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, GoVeganRadio.com, Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Facebook, GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden. So coming up next week, we'll have Michael Budke talking about an important anti-vivisection conference coming to Los Angeles in October. The Free the Animals conference. Also, we'll be talking about a march against ivory in San Francisco. Also, on next week's program, I reveal and expose a very big Humane Society of the United States lie. You're not going to want to miss that. And I wanted to talk about the USDA inspection program. It's a pilot program for so-called pork. It would totally gross you out. I'll gross you out next week. Right now, I want to continue our celebration of historic legislation that will ban the sale of fur. In West Hollywood, California, we're talking to Ellen Leventhal of the Fur-Free WeHo Movement. And we want to make sure, and there's a rally next week, by the way, or this coming Saturday, in support of the legislation. We want to deter the Chamber of Commerce and the fur industry. They're out there with comments like, well, can't we have a kinder, gentler approach to this instead of an outright ban? But there's nothing kind and gentle about fur, which involves trapping or, you know, stomping, drowning, harsh confinement that drives animals berserk, then the gassing, anal and genital electrocution. Nothing attractive about fur, nothing kind and gentle. And we thank the city of West Hollywood for showing compassion and for, you know, really, I mean, this is a sign that, you know, maybe we are civilized. Ellen, so...
I love that you brought that point up, Bob, that it's not just the way they die, it's the way they live right up until they die. Like when you mentioned the confinement that drives them insane, you know, I think that's a point that doesn't get brought up enough. And I also wanted to make one other point, because I don't know when the commercial came in and Ann had cut me off, but I wanted to make this point. The Chamber and the Fur Council are claiming that this is going to hurt retail businesses and are considering suing the city to overturn the ban. And what they're, omitting from the conversation is, from the dialogue, is that not a single retail establishment has left because of the ban. And in fact, retail establishments are coming into West Hollywood, even those like Dash, which is the Kardashian store that is known. You know, I mean, we've protested in front of that store and other locations, you know, for carrying fur. And they are willing to come into West Hollywood knowing that they can't have fur in the store. That's how attractive being in West Hollywood is to businesses. So their claims are largely unfounded. Mm-hmm. And one other thing I did want to add regarding the celebration, we will also be offering the activists and people, concerned citizens that choose to come out and rally with us, free vegan pizza. So, you know.
Well, there you go. There you go. Now the crowds will be, you'll need barricades for the crowds there. So, and again, this is coming up this Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m. That's September 21st, where North San Vicente meets Santa Monica Boulevard. Is that?
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. On the near the sheriff's station on the southeast corner. Mm-hmm. And I always like to just, you know, end with this, on this little quote that I don't know if that I came up with, and that is that women think that that fur makes them look rich and glamorous, when in reality it makes them look selfish and uncaring.
Well, and, you know, to tell you the truth, I mean, I hate to say it, but it kind of gives them a fat and hairy look, you know, so it's like,
exactly.
It's like maybe don't shave and eat another cheeseburger. No, I don't mean that. Never eat a cheeseburger, but, you know, I mean, it's
Well, it definitely does. It does make them look a little heavier around the hips when you're wearing those thick fur coats.
Right. And you know, and there isn't another gift that says, I don't care. Like the gift of fur, like if you're trying to impress someone these days, it's like, Look, honey, look how much I don't care, you know? I mean, that's
and
really...
I think that's why fur infuriates me, because people have asked me, you know, of all the issues out there, why is this one of the ones that you've, you know, embraced? Not that they don't all matter and have mattered to me, but I think one of the reasons is because people know it isn't like there is so much more ignorance around some of the other issues than there are around fur.
And I did want to mention that, of course, in a real civilized world, we would also be banning leather, wool, and silk. But
Yes. It's
a start. We'll get people thinking about what they eat, what they wear, and they'll come to their senses and their morality. Thanks for being with us,
Good
Ellen
point.
Leventhal.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay, we look forward to the celebration. Thanks for what you did for the animals. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Archives at goveganradio.com.